Good afternoon. This is Michael Osterlink, and I am again speaking with Dr. Elliot Dasher. He has written a new book entitled Aware, Awake, Alive, A Contemporary Guide to the Ancient Science of Integral Health and Human Flourishing. Good afternoon, Dr. Dasher.
Good afternoon. Nice to be here with you and with your listeners.
Well, it's great to have you back. Congratulations on your new book.
Thank you.
Well, I'd like to start by reading a quote in your book. It says, "Tell me what you plan to do with your one wild and precious life," by Mary Oliver in The Summer Day. And I read that because your book was generated out of what you planned to do with your wild and precious life. But I put planned around in quotes. Could you tell your story on what eventually became this book?
Sure. Thank you for asking. Well, I'm a traditionally trained physician, an internal medicine doctor, and I worked for 20 years full-time practicing internal medicine. And at the end of that period of time, which really coincided with my householding activities and responsibilities diminishing, I just sat back on 20 wonderful and interesting years of exploring medicine and stress and wellness and holism, et cetera. I look back and try to evaluate what that had meant to my life, and it had been enriching my life, but I realized there was still more that was not there in my life, more happiness, more health, more peace. There was just more that was not in my own life and yet not also in my healing practice, and I felt that it was time to sit back at this particular moment in life and to really relook. And so I actually left my practice, left my home, and came up to a small community that I had lived in previously, and just sat around really very quietly, letting the kind of natural rhythms come back to my body over a year or two, and then found myself serendipitously in India, not planning that. And what happened at that point was that I really found individuals, people, teachers, that to me looked to have brought into their life a very deep and pervasive inner happiness and peace. Had great wisdom and joy and great heart about them. And I just realized that them showing me how this can show up in life demonstrated to me that both was possible and that there was a path in which to bring that into life, to bring a deeper joy, to flourish into the great potentials of human life, to create what we can call a precious life out of an ordinary life. And so I began to return for the next 12 years, really up into the current time, studying really 2 to 3 to 6 months a year in India and in Nepal, studying the great philosophies and Eastern philosophies and psychologies, as well as the practices and methods and meditation. And that became really the core of my moving along a path that I found was bringing me to the kind of richness and treasures in life and the capacity to heal in a deeper way that I found previously wanting. And so when the time was right, I decided to bring this together and to try to find a way to teach this to Western people in a way that was accessible. And so I began teaching about 6 years ago at a local hospital. And these were 10-week courses, 2 hours a week in the evening, focusing primarily on training in inner development. How does this mind work? How do we reduce the overactivity of the mind? How do we gather the wisdom, the insight, the understanding that's there? What is suffering? What is happiness? And really working very experientially to teach people how to practice. And we developed the manual for the book, for the course. And in time, the manual seemed to be so large and of benefit to people with the CD that we use in it that it just seemed appropriate to bring that into a book with the practice CD accompanying the book. And hoping and believing that that may be a benefit to others, as it has been to the hundreds of people that have been through these classes. So that's how I got to where I am with the book.
Fantastic. And before we jump into your book and talk about the different parts of the book, can you describe the experiences that people had when you first put this program together and started implementing it in your sessions at the hospital? I don't just mean the quote-unquote positive, life-affirming, wellness and wellness-promoting activities or experiences. What, perhaps, difficulties did people encounter that was kind of grist for your mill in helping you develop this program. And I'll perhaps put that in a personal context too, because I'm sure the same things that some of your patients encounter, you might have also encountered as you traveled in India and Nepal.
Well, I think the first thing that people have difficulty with is it's not so much reading the intellectual material, the didactic understandings that we're all familiar with and used to, but the issue of sitting down and actually quieting the mind. Until you can actually quiet the mind from its endless and ceaseless chatter, you don't have a spaciousness in which you can begin to observe how the mind works, begin to look at how your life is related to that, and begin to cultivate the deeper layers of the mind. So the obstacles people have initially are, I can't find the 20 minutes or so to sit down. Of course, this is very odd because we all learn how to take care of our body. We learn how to brush our teeth, take a shower in the morning, get dressed, do all the things we're supposed to do. But somehow or other, we never learn to prepare our mind in the morning. And so how do I find this 20 minutes? How do I stop the overactive mind? How do I deal with circumstances in which I'm reactive? So all of these things become things that come up early on. But the first thing is, how do I actually sit there and quiet my mind? Because no matter what I do, it continues to be noisy. And then there are many different obstacles that occur in that process. I get too sleepy. My mind can't be stopped. I get impatient. I want to get up. I have a to-do list. So there are all kinds of things we have that get in the way of us learning how to just still the mind to its natural place of ease and then begin to look at our life in the context of that.
Great, thank you. Now let's jump into your book. Your title is Aware, Awake, Alive, A Contemporary Guide to the Ancient Science of Integral Health and Human Flourishing. Part one you've entitled Vision. Can you kind of give us an overview of what you mean by that?
Well, if we want to accomplish anything in life, we have to have a vision so we know where we're headed. And the vision is one of optimal health and human flourishing, which means that we know through experience and through watching others who have done so that stress, distress, suffering can be alleviated and actually eliminated in life. It's not a normal genetic part of life. It's something that's an add-on to life. And that the qualities of human flourishing can begin to develop in our life as we develop our inner life. And these are an inner and sustained happiness, a serenity that's stable and pervasive, a wisdom and compassion that's authentic, that comes from within, a love and love that goes out impartially to others. These wonderful, rich qualities of how we can live our life are what we're aiming at. And in the process of getting there, we begin by trying to quiet the mind and alleviate suffering. So that's the direction we're going towards, living a precious life that lives the fullness of what's possible for any human being.
Now, when you use the word integral in your title of your book, do you mean it also in the sense of how Aurobindo or Wilbur or Gebser used it?
I would say yes, in the sense that an integral health, as Aurobindo used it and then Wilbur and others, has to do with looking at the major components of our life, which are our psycho-spiritual life, our biological aspects of our life, our body, our interpersonal relationships, and our relationship to culture and the outer world. These are the four main areas in our life that are related to health and related to disease, and we need to attend to all of them. But in modern times, the one that is most undeveloped is really our inner life. And if we don't develop our inner life, we don't have the capacity to really grow our relationships, attain access to the most subtle skills of mind-body regulation, or in fact shift our relationship in the world to one of using the world to meet our needs to one of actually serving the world. So in modern times, in the integral model, the driving force is inner development. That's what drives the rest of the integral model or all aspects of our well-being.
Thank you. Part two, title is The Path. Tell us about this path.
Well, you know, in the traditions, the great traditions, the path always follows the vision. If you know where you want to go, you have to find a way to go there. And so in that, the 10 chapters in that section, which correspond to the 10 weeks of the course, and we do a different topic each time. What moves through the entire thing is our work on quieting the mind, stabilizing the mind, learning about our basic state of awareness inside, and beginning to access an understanding of how the mind works, both in its dysfunctions and how it works naturally, which has been hidden from us for such a long time. And so we follow that thread of helping people as if they were in class with practice tips, etc., and the CD is there with the practices on them. And then we have a different topic each time, and we begin with just looking what it is like to develop a life living from today rather than yesterday, that is a life free of all the noise and all the beliefs and all the habits and the practices of meditation, exactly how we do it, the issue of suffering and distress, what are the causes of suffering, what are the causes of stress and distress. We really don't discuss that much in our culture. We suffer and we bear it, or we throw something at it. But if you really want to know how to treat something, the same as in medicine, you have to understand its cause, then you know its proper remedy. So we talk about the causes of stress and suffering, the ways in which to deal with afflictive emotions. We look at what in our life supports this work, what to cultivate, and what to abandon. We look at the very nature of the overactive mind in very subtle ways, and we then address how we bring our interpersonal relationships to bear on growing our life, how we bring work and our relationship to the outer world to bear living on life. And so it's all this development of both the practices, which is the formal sitting practice, and day-to-day practices like listening in a mindful and open way to people, which is something we rarely do, being mindful in the moment, dealing with afflictive emotions and seeing them for actually how they actually work in others so that we respond with a wisdom and a compassion rather than another afflictive emotion, more anger. So it's the progression of bringing more and more practices to bear, using everything from life as a way of growing our inner life and also growing our knowledge base that goes with it. And so that would be the chapters that represent the path to get to our vision.
You know, listening to you talk, it sounds as if you're talking kind of an owner's manual for the soul, the self, the psyche, the spirit. And it just reminds me that we get owner's manuals for our cars, our televisions, you know, our big commercial items that we purchase for ourselves. But you're right, we aren't really taught, it's not even in our culture, to learn how to understand, be with, experience our own selves in relationship to ourselves and to other people, how our own mind works, our own biology, physiology works. And I would imagine that people who go through this program have some amazing experiences as they kind of begin to sit with themselves. Part three is fruition. Can you describe what that means and how some of these practices that you discuss in part two impact people's lives?
Well, part three, fruition, is what happens when we work the path or move along the path. Now, the path actually described in the book is not mine. This is a very traditional path in varied cultures across time. So there's nothing that's individually mine. There are words and adaptions to the modern condition, but the path is quite time-tested and traditional. If you do the work right, if you do like baking a cake, you put all the ingredients together that properly and bake it properly, you know what kind of cake you're going to get. If you do all the activities in the path over a lifetime and you work this, then progressively we touch into and develop the qualities of human flourishing, which we call the fruition. So the natural consequence of the path is the results of the path of the fruition, which is actually the realization of the vision. So the vision is a vision of the alleviation of suffering and the promotion of these great qualities of human flourishing, and that's really what comes out at the end. So there's a progressive movement. So we talk about the development of serenity or peace, which moves from being a process of relaxation to one of quieting the afflictions of the mind to one of just settling into this natural space of effortless ease, which is a progressive development over time. We talk about the development of happiness from outside pleasure seeking to the content of a still mind to the deep delight of being alive and present each moment. We talk about the development of insight and wisdom, the development of love and compassion. And we finally talk about the perfection of health. And the perfection of health really is a term that comes from Aurobindo, as you mentioned before. And this comes about because we really see that health is not a condition of the state of our body, but it's about the character and the quality of our lives and the state of our being. And if health is the state of our being, irrespective of whether our physicality is completely biologically healthy or not, if it's the state of our being, then we can bring our health to a perfection no matter what our physical condition is. And so these are the kind of qualities that progressively develop. And we see this in class. We see these things starting developing 2-3 weeks into. It's really, to me, it's absolutely astonishing. Every time I see it, I can hardly believe it. People are less reactive initially. There's more peace. They can be with people they couldn't be with before and not get all wrapped up in it. They can begin to get spaces, gaps between they can actually stop and not do something they might choose not to do. They begin to change the nature of their lives. There's less noise. There's more quietness. There's less trivial conversations or unnecessary entertainment. And there's more of a peace and a sense of mastery over life and a deep sense of relief that, wow, there really is a way. There really is a way to have a better life. I don't have to be stuck in the confusion and the stress and the distress. And we see that very frequently. I'm doing 5 courses now. I just did a 2-hour a course not an hour ago that I do as a webinar out in California to a group. And it amazes me. We go around the room. We work very experientially. That's what I focus on. I need to get people to be able to do these practices. And people just flow into it because they see their lives becoming better. And so that's what we try to describe, the end point, the full vision as it develops in that chapter on fruition.
You mentioned the classes that you're doing right now. Where can people find out more about them? And where are you located?
I'm located on the East Coast, south of Boston. The classes I do really at local hospitals, several of them for the community here. There are 2 of them doing out in California now by web, which are actually closed groups, but there will be workshops coming up or groups coming up that can be joined. And for that, if people just reach me at my website and put their name on my mailing list, then they will know that as soon as when it happens.
Well, let's go into part 4, and then I will ask you to give your website. It's really important for people to follow up on this conversation and participate in your program. Part 4 is integration. Tell us about integration.
Well, I wanted to talk a bit about how growing our mind, growing our heart, alleviating suffering relates to the kind of diseases that we suffer from today. We're no longer at the time in which the primary diseases in our culture actually are bacteriological, which pushed medical science, or even necessarily physical. We suffer from stress disorders, from mood disorders, from the extension of stress disorders, post-traumatic stress disorder, attention deficit disorders, all kinds of heart disease, chronic diseases, all kinds of diseases that have as one of their components the contribution of a dysfunctional mind that's chaotic and that's disturbed and stressed and confused, constantly multitasking. So I want to show how we can bring what we learn about our inner life into working with these diseases in a multidimensional way. So it's not to suggest that it's just the mind alone. Now, some of them are more biological. Some of them have more to do with the mind, such as attention deficit disorder and post-traumatic stress syndrome. And some of them are just a mixture. So if we take something like, let's take a mixture, a heart disease, chronic heart disease. Heart disease is the number one killer in our country. Cancer is the second. And we know from many, many studies that have been done that there is a cancer-prone personality and a heart disease-prone personality and a heart disease-prone mind style that supports the changes that take place that produce the chronic heart disease. And if we can add to the treatment, the rehabilitation, or the prevention, this process of diminishing stress, diminishing distress, diminishing suffering, creating more of an inner balance, more of a harmony, that is reflected in the physiology of the body, and is reflected in the physiology of the blood system, and of the components that the biological components that produce heart disease. So I try to really show how we can use inner development, contemplative practices, as an adjunct or a part of a multidimensional approach. And the same can be said about the other things covered in that chapter, depression, ADD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and so on. So we're not talking, when we talk about inner development, of only the mind. Mind is inseparable from the body, the same as wetness is inseparable from water. So when we work with the mind, we add a whole new dimension that integralizes the way we approach disease. And I try to really introduce that in that chapter.
This is Michael Ostrolenk, and I'm speaking with Dr. Elliot Dasher. He's the author of Aware, Awake, Alive, A Contemporary Guide to the Ancient Science of Integral Health and Human Flourishing. Dr. Dasher, you mentioned your website where people can go to learn more about your programs and also hopefully purchase your book. What's your web address?
Well, it's www, as usual. My name, ElliotDasher.org. Or one can look at the book title on any of the online sellers, Aware, Awake, Alive. And that would be a great way to get in touch with me, and I'd love to hear from anybody.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Dasher. Great to have you back on. Congratulations on your book. And I hope many people go and check out your site, purchase your book, and join your program.
My pleasure. Thank you very much, and good evening.